Can I welcome everybody to the November meeting of the Audit Committee? I need to read this announcement first of all though. This meeting will be recorded and the sound recording subsequently made available via the Council's website, charnwood.gov.uk/pages/committees. Please note that under the Openness of Local Government Bodies Regulations 2014, that other people may film, record, tweet or blog from this meeting. The use of any images or sound recordings is not under the Council's control. Before I start the agenda proper, I'm intending to move item 12 and 13, thus the exempt information and the annual IT health check. Intending to move it up to take it after item 6 on the agenda. That's all right. Do you have any apologies?
Councillor Haji Nicola has to leave at approximately 7 o'clock.
Okay, we've still got a quorum, haven't we?
Yeah.
Sorry, Jeff.
Then we'll move on to item 2, which is minutes of the previous meeting. Give people time to have a look through. Is everyone content? And I can approve them at the end of the meeting. And sign them in.
Yes.
Yes, sir.
But then we have no. First of all, are there any disclosures of pecuniary and personal interest?
No.
Okay. Then there are no questions under committee procedure rule 2.8. So we'll move on to the external auditor's annual audit letter. Right, would you like to say something then?
Thank you. So, first of all, I will just apologise for not making the meeting last time. It so coincided with four others, and I took the view in terms of the risk and where you are on my scale of risk not to be here, and I hopefully you take that in the right spirit, in that you didn't need me to be here for the positive outcomes from last year's audit. The annual audit letter you have here is merely an executive summary of everything that came before, so there's nothing new in here, no new conclusions, no new findings. It's merely the final letter that we're required to put to you as a council. So with that said, I'll just be more than happy to take any questions from yourselves about that letter or any other matters pertinent to it.
Does anyone wish to raise any questions?
It's not a question, it's just I just thought this was a really, really helpful resume, and reading through it, it sort of brought back to my mind what we discussed at some length at our last meeting about the audit and financial statements, so I think that's really helpful.
I think it's useful. You're going to be hosting some meetings with council officers. When do you propose starting those?
So the planning work for 2019-20 kicks off in the new year. We do a little bit of work before Christmas, but mainly that's desktop based, looking at things that's on your website, but the real meetings will kick off in January.
Okay. Councillor Parsons.
A couple of points. I just note the statement about the pension liability increasing by almost 4 million. Are we fine with that on page 11? There's no sort of commentary about whether that's, as we expected, whether that's reasonable. It just says a material adjustment was made increasing the liability by £4 million. It doesn't say to what detriment, plus or minus, whether we're happy with that, comfortable with that, whether I'm reassured that's still okay. It just says it happened.
So that was an accounting adjustment, not a cash adjustment. And there is an important differential because the council hasn't had to fork out an additional £4 million worth to support the pension fund. It was related to a matter that hit every single local authority in the country. And it's just due to a couple of legal cases that we talk about here, guaranteed minimum pensions and McLeod. So those were processed as an accounting adjustment in the financial statements, and from there, our perspective considered complete. There is a, in terms of ongoing matters, there is a triennial review of the pension fund liability, which will inform future payments for the council into that pension fund, of which these kind of factors will be drawn in.
When, in the final paragraph, when you say that we obtained the assurance required, do you mean we obtained the assurance required that we can still meet that liability, or that that liability will be met and we've got no concern here? So it's just what assurance did we get? What aspect of assurance did we get with that statement?
So in the fourth paragraph, fourth bullet point in the middle column, we get assurance over the pension, the value of the pension fund from the pension fund auditor. So what this refers to, and more detail was in the what we call our audit completion memorandum in July. Basically, we get a letter from the pension fund auditor telling us that the figures that come out of the pension fund for Charnwood Borough Council can be relied upon. So what happened was the pension fund liability had been calculated by the pension fund. We went back and said, actually, can you add these extra items in? Which came back as £4 million. The pension fund auditor then had to come back and say, everything is in line. That's the final figure to use.
Can I maybe try and help Chair? Just how is that a real number? Sort of, no, it's an accounting number. How does that manifest itself in our accounts? So at the moment, our pension on costs are 30.1% average across all of our employees, which is quite a lot. So we've actually just had the draft valuation in, and that shows that the on costs are going to go up from 30.1 to 31.1 next year, 32.1 the year after, and 33.1 the year after that. So that's what the actuaries are projecting. So that's how actually the number works through into a real number in terms of our accounts. So our on costs of employees will be increasing in line with that draft statement going forward, unless for some reason that draft gets revised, but I wouldn't expect that to be the case.
If I may, Chair?
Yes.
Bottom of page 16, I don't understand what lease accounting is.
Well, sorry, I'm just scanning to the page, lease. So, essentially there will be a change in the accounting treatment for how every public sector entity, and actually every private sector entity, accounts for its leases, in which at the moment any, I'll give you an example, say a leased car, most likely leased cars are essentially a way of accounting for the liability off the balance sheet. So there's no liability, it's just like a rental payment. The change in the accounting standards that will be coming through will ask organisations to reassess that, because actually there is a liability. So it will roll up an additional liability into the financial statements going forwards.
So is that a liability that's going to appear in our budgets because it's been off the balance sheet up till now, and all of a sudden we're going to see something reappear in our budgets as a liability, therefore as a cost to us elsewhere, or is it already accounted for? It's just an accounting procedure in terms of like an accrual or whatever. It's a later cost.
There will be
a later liability.
Yeah, it's more of an accounting adjustment. So there will be a liability on the balance sheet which wasn't previously there because it was just running through on a, let's just say, a monthly payment
revenue basis.
But there will be a liability coming forward. There will be a small change in the. I suspect there will be a small change in the amounts that run through the revenue account, but these are all accounting differences. I would say, for the concern I think that you have in terms of the council getting hit by additional charges, that this is an accounting change, and that concern should not manifest itself.
But by leases, you're talking about, say, an example being a lease of a car, but that doesn't include the leases of all of our tenancies and buildings and council houses and...
Not council houses, but things like land and buildings may be leased and they're on an operating lease, which will turn things around. But this will be an accounting difference, which will not hit the general fund, the taxpayer amount. These will be accounting adjustments that go through with no specific impact on the council's underlying finances.
Would that be a big number because it's got all the leases of lots of property or land we own and other bits and pieces?
That's not a question I can answer because I don't know what the leases are. What I will say is that there's a fair amount of work that would have to go in from the council running through its lease register to determine.
Do we lease all our IT? Do we lease all our computers? Do we lease all our hardware? Or is that purchased?
It's all something we're looking at actually in terms of moving to the cloud, but at the moment it's all owned.
It's all owned.
Basically, it's on the I wouldn't say 100%, but basically it's owned. But it is a very, very complex matter, so everything has to be done on a case by case basis. I don't think, in terms of what the council does from a purchase side, that there is a material problem with this. I must admit, I've not really thought about it in terms of our leases that we levy on our tenants, for example, in our business units. That may be more of a question for them, but that's I must confess, it's a somewhat technical matter in what is a very technical standard that would need to be worked through. I think in on the revenue side, I think it would be more potentially an issue for our tenants than it is for us.
In terms of the balance sheet, there'll be something on the liability side and something on the asset side, which will balance one another.
We'll change the bottom right angle.
And somewhere in the revenue account will be the cost of the actual leases.
Yeah.
Through
the peculiarities of local government accounting, there will be adjustments that go in the accounts that are then reversed out so that there is no impact on the general fund. It's just the general way of doing it.
Okay. Does anyone else wish to raise any questions? Then I think the recommendation, it's not a recommendation, but we need to note this, I think. You content to note the audit?
Yeah.
Then we'll move on to the environmental audits report on outcomes. I was going to say, Mike, you're welcome to stay if you wish to slip away.
I'm happy to stay for a bit.
Stay and see what we do.
Thank you.
Okay. Maria.
Hello, yes, for the record, I'm Maria French, the Council Sustainability Officer. I'm here to present the environmental audits report. So the idea of this report is to provide an update on audits that were undertaken in March 2019. The council has an in-house environmental management system which is used to manage legal compliance with environmental legislation and environmental impacts around its own activities and operations. In the corporate plan, we have a commitment to take action to protect the environment for future generations, and we've also adopted a climate change strategy, a carbon management plan, a zero waste strategy and a green spaces strategy towards this aim. The overall driver for the environmental management system comes from the council's environmental policy. We also had a recent climate change notice of motion which was approved by full council on the 24th of June. And as part of this, we set an aspiration for the council to achieve carbon neutrality from its own operations by 2030. So just to note that at the last audit committee on the 11th of June, there was a request to receive an update at the November meeting on any outstanding non-conformance issues that hadn't been addressed. So just to provide a bit of background, the environmental management system covers the properties that the council own and manage, which is Southfield Road offices, the ICS building, the Loughborough Town Hall, Charnwood Museum, the Open Art Business Centres and Woodgate Chambers. It relates directly to the operations of the council and not any activities that are subcontracted. So, for example, the waste. It does not deal with activities related to enforcement. So, for example, planning regulations. The sustainability officer provides a resource to coordinate the environmental management system. The programme is overseen by the senior management team, but the implementation of the environmental management system is the direct responsibility of service areas. So just to provide a bit of background to the actual audit process itself, the findings are presented as non-conformance with requirement, which is essentially a non-fulfilment of a legal requirement, or we have an issue or a recommendation. So the former is the more serious finding, in the sense that there is proof that a legal requirement is not being met, or there's a lack of evidence to prove that it's being met. An issue may be an instance where there is a non-fulfilment of a legal requirement, but there is a lack of environmental best practice being used, or there is currently a breach in legislation, but the issue should be addressed to avoid doing so in the future. And thirdly, we have a recommendation which recognises something which may later develop into a non-conformance or an issue that needs addressing. So from the last meeting in June, there were 14 outstanding non-conformances, 10 of which have now been resolved, and 4 have programmes to ensure they're resolved in a timely manner. Of the 13 remaining issues, 8 have been completed and 5 have programmes to ensure they're resolved in a timely manner. And of the 8 recommendations, all 8 have programmes in place to ensure they're looked at in a timely manner. In Appendix A, there is an outline of all the actions and their latest status, but I've provided a briefing in the report on the non-conformances because that was highlighted specifically at the last meeting. So I just wanted to go through those. The first two were at the Charnwood Museum, and these are related to the recycling from mixed recycling collected via the bid, and also Clearably waste collection. Waste providers have since been contacted again for the correct paperwork, and that is still unfortunately outstanding at the moment. The other action is from the Town Hall. Under the TM44 regulations, companies are required to ensure that inspection of air conditioning systems are carried out. The inspection includes an assessment of the system's efficiency, and currently there is no TM44 in place for the Town Hall. I've been advised that this is due to a supplier issue and is now booked in for November, so I'd expect by the April audits that that matter would have been resolved. And lastly, at the Art Business Centre, there is currently a release for trade effluent storm drains in the car park from the mobile vehicle washing units and tenants, which is not permitted. So to provide an update on that, a permit to discharge has been made to Severn Trent Water. Authorisation is awaited for the consent. Future tenants have been made aware that the activity is not permitted on site, and additional control measures are being put in place with a works order to install a French drain outside the responsible units. It is unknown at this stage when Severn Trent will make a decision on that consent. So in terms of monitoring, we have a 6-monthly audit and we have a full monitoring audit. So we just completed the 6-monthly audit in October, so a full audit will be carried out in April, and then this will be reported to SMT and then come back to yourselves in June. I don't know if you wanted to go through the appendix or if you have any questions on what I've said so far.
Just in terms of the one with the disposal of water, could Severn Trent turn that down, and what position would they be in now?
They could potentially turn it down. I mean, indications are when they came on site that it wouldn't be an issue. The discharge, the trade effluent is not anything that's of a high sort of risk. So that in all intents and purposes, it will actually just be discharged to the foul drains anyway. So I can't imagine that it would be turned down.
I was just thinking about this. I think we may just have had that condition actually, but don't. It may be something we can check for. Maybe for the minute, Sally, we'll just put that down and we'll follow that up. Just for information, the trade effluent is basically soap suds from a car wash, so it's not sort of hydrochloric acid or anything like that. It is sort of soap suds from a car wash, but clearly we do need to comply with the environmental standards.
I presume the risk is it's getting into water courses, is it?
Yes, so currently it would be going to the surface water drains. Mm. So the idea is to put the drain in so it redirects to the fan.
Right, okay. Anybody else wish to raise any questions? No? Then are we prepared to note the report? And the actions identified?
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you for your attendance. You're very welcome to stay if you wish, but if you wish to quietly slip away then. And you can do so. As I said at the outset, I was planning to take the final item on the agenda, which is an exempt report from the Head of Customer Experience. So it's recommended that members of the public be excluded from the meeting during the consideration of this item, on the grounds that it involves the likely disclosure of exempt information as defined in paragraph 3 of part 1 of Schedule 12A to the Local Government Act 1972, and the public interest in maintaining the exemption outweighs the public interest of disclosing the information. Are members in agreement?
Yes.
To suggest handing the papers in.
I don't understand part of this.
No.
That's
correct.
And can I just thank you as well, please?
No,
we'll move on to item 7 on the agenda now, which is the Treasury Management Mid-Year Review.
Do you want me to just briefly introduce this chair?
Yes, please, please.
So this is Simon Jackson, the Director of Corporate Services for the record. This is a Treasury Management Mid-Year Review. It is our standard report which reflects on our Treasury Management activities during the period. So there is actually one matter of significance here. So the actual borrowing requirements and the changes have actually been minimal or zero, in fact. So if you were to go to the beginning of the report and look at recommendation 2, to note the governance and management procedures and comply with the code of practice, that's all absolutely fine. And if you sort of go through some of the tables in the report, you will see that we haven't actually undertaken any more borrowing. So actually the matter is static. So that's actually no actual changes have occurred within what our treasury or our borrowing activities are. What is more significant though is recommendation 1, which talks about the increase in our authorised limits to authorised change to our prudential borrowing limits, and they are to reflect. So that what that recommendation is, and that will go to council in due course, is will increase the authorised amount that we are able to borrow within our limits. So that is something that I think is significant and of note. And the reasons why we're doing that in this particular case, at this particular time, are to reflect two things. So one is the prospective purchase of the fleet potentially using borrowing. Now, I will say that this change would enable us to borrow to finance the refuse freighter fleet, if I can say that properly, which I can't really, but it's to allow us to finance the purchase of the refuse freighter fleet using borrowing when that when payment is required for that fleet come June, so it's on order now, we'll need to pay for it in June. As the matters stand at the moment, and these things can change, we wouldn't actually borrow money to finance a fleet purchase. We would be able to do it from internal borrowing. So what that would mean is we wouldn't have to go through the process of obtaining a loan from the PWRB and incurring the interest. So we'll be able to do it from our internal resources. So what we will be doing on this one, and actually more generally, is when we make a major purchase, we'll be looking at the state of our balance sheet, which essentially is a look at what outstanding borrowings we have, what the cash balances are, to actually decide whether we actually would need to take out a loan or not. But what this does is it allows us to do that. And similarly, that's 5 million of the 15 million increase that's set out in recommendation one. The other 10 million reflects what we had in the investment strategy that went to cabinet in September and then went to council, I think, just a couple of weeks ago. And we have actually identified or earmarked £10 million pot to start investing in commercial property. So again, if and when we are to invest in commercial property, we would undertake a review of our cash availability and resources at the time to make sure that actually borrowing was the most appropriate way forward. As I say, we may or may not wish to borrow at that time. But basically, so this doesn't actually make any decisions in whether we are going to take out a loan or not. What it does do, though, is allow us to do so should we think that's appropriate at a point in time. But it is quite important. I think we haven't actually changed the authorised operational boundary and authorised limits for a long, long time. So I think it is important to note that and maybe to reflect on that for the purposes of council going forward.
Questions? Councillor Parsons.
I need convincing to do 15 million, not 10, because what you're telling me is that, so first of all, I'm not clear that the decision's been made yet about what percentage we're funding or not funding potentially of the fleet. Don't think that decision's been made.
It hasn't, no.
So, and I can't remember what the total cost is.
It's just shy of £5 million. So hence, out of the 15 million, 5 million is related to the fleet.
So that if we were to do it totally on borrowings?
So at the moment, if given our existing cash resources and our existing borrowing commitment, what we would do is actually borrow nothing and we'd be able to finance it from our existing
resources. So I'm not keen to give you a 15 million limit if already you're telling me that it's unlikely that you're going to use 5 of it, because I feel I'll have given a 15 million limit. 10's for the purposes I know from the Treasury investment strategy that went through. But 5 is stuck on top, but I don't think we're going to use it anyway because we've got enough cash in the reserves that we probably won't use. But give me permission now, and then in 6 months' time we pay cash out of the reserves for it. But that 15 million limit is still sitting there because it's not dedicated to the 5 million lorry. So we'll end up with a 15 million limit, not a 10 million limit. Mm-hmm. So I'm inclined to tell you that I'd like 10 million limit, and I'd stick my hand up and vote for that tonight. And I'm not sure I want to stick my hand up and vote for the 5, because I feel like it's a limit that already you're indicating to me we're unlikely to spend because we're probably out of the reserves anyway. But let's have the permission now. In 3 months' time, we'll all have forgotten about it. We'll have purchased the vehicles. That 15 million limit will still be there and usable and will not be tied to 5 million direct to the fleet. So I'm nervous of that. I'm very nervous of each step we take down this route, not because I'm suspicious in terms of the philosophy we've got to adopt, but I feel that 5 million is not attached to the fleet. I feel it will become an open limit with an extra 5 million of wiggle room for people the minute we purchase the fleet using reserves that we've actually got. So I'm nervous about putting my hand up and going 15 million tonight.
So there's two things really. One is I would be sort of nervous in terms of having to write a cheque out to the banks payment or whatever payment method it would be to the fleet providers and not have the wherewithal to do that. So I guess if I guess in reality we would pay them, and but I would not like to be in a position where we would have to borrow money and have breached our limit. So it is a safety net in that respect, which we may or may not use. I would say though that there are other controls, so we wouldn't be spending, certainly based on our existing contribution, we wouldn't be spending £5 million on something else, because that, without actually Cabinet and Council getting, or certainly, you know, depending on what it was and how the amounts were, but there are governance processes and controls that would surround other purchasing and other borrowing we would do. So this is not the only control over this use of borrowing. There are other controls that would be in place and would be which would require visibility and transparency for councillors were we to actually use that resource or that ability to borrow money.
I'm nervous as the layman that's correct from my perspective in understanding where those controls will lie and who will exercise them in terms of the governance, because the governance around this whole commercialisation seems to me to still not be perfectly formed and shaped yet about how we go forward in terms of all of that. So I am nervous about giving 5 million extra, which is not directly attached to the fleet. I can't see, from my limited understanding of the finances, how we will not have that money available in the reserves, from everything I understand about the reserves, were we to wish to do it. So it needs to be an active decision, from everything I can see of the finances, to need to borrow to fund the percentage, because we may not borrow 5 million, we may decide only to borrow 2 million, but you've still got 5 million limit increase. I'm nervous in the current, going forward, I'm immediately ceding controls and governance issues, which I'm not sure we fully appreciate and have fully formed and fully shaped yet. So I'm really happy to give you 10, because I kind of sense I stuck my arm up and voted for something I vaguely understood and had a bit of a feel with the £10 million on the investment strategy. I'm not keen to stick my hand up to put that to 15 if the 5 isn't directly attached to the fleet and isn't directly attached to the cost of borrowing for the fleet, because we may only choose to borrow 50% if we borrow anything at all. So I feel like I'm kind of giving away a £5 million limit, and the governance around that extra 5 million. Not that I don't distrust you. Please don't take it in that way whatsoever.
I'm off to one to see you tomorrow, Councillor Parsons.
I feel like, I did know that. I saw you in the travel agent.
That's right.
I feel I'm ceding governance over a 5 million limit, which is a reasonable sum of money in the current environment, and I will lose control and tracking and governance over how that 5 million is used the minute the fleet's bought with 5 million of cash from the reserves, but that 15 limit is still there. That's my sense, and nothing that's been said so far has convinced me otherwise. My colleagues may feel differently, and I will be outvoted if it goes to a vote, but that's my sense of where I feel in ceding that extra 5 million at this point in time over the fleet.
Okay,
can I just bring Adrian in?
Chair, thank you. Just for clarification, the Audit Committee is not being asked to make a decision on this tonight. This is a report purely for information. So Cabinet have already recommended this to go to full council in January, and it will be full council that will make a decision. So the committee tonight, this is purely an information item.
Right, thank you for clarifying that for me.
Do you know what, I was going to say exactly the same thing. So obviously our role was independent. I'm not here to help you with your decision making whatsoever. I can only give you some kind of broader context that I can bring to you. So again, I was just going to say, obviously it's not for the audit committee to make this decision over the authorisation piece. All I can say to you in terms of context of what happens elsewhere is it's not unusual to have a borrowing limit that is higher than what you actually need. That's many local authorities do that. There are other kind of arrangements in place. There's this thing there's a statutory duty on the council and via the section 151 officer of something called borrowing in advance of need. And councils are not allowed to borrow in advance of need. So in terms of compensating controls that are out there are other aspects for it. But for me, just bringing it back to you as an audit committee, what's your role in this? It's about the assurance processes that are there. I think, in my personal opinion, those points are your points, but they're for the not this committee, they're for the council meeting, because that's where the authorisation takes place. It's right to air them, it's right to bring them, but in terms of what you can make a decision on in this meeting, you can't make that decision here.
I have to understand that and appreciate the comment. I will be noting to Cabinet and full council as it currently stands that I am not assured around the governance of the 5 million. I'm comfortable with the 10, and I'm very comfortable to lobby that through Cabinet and council and take that decision. So I'm going to note the report. I'm on record publicly and on the recording as not being comfortable around that. I'm not comfortably reassured. And we'll have to take that to Cabinet and minute reference or whatever in bringing that to the attention of Cabinet in the public domain. I'm very comfortable to do that.
Thank you. I think, Simon, you wanted to come in as well.
Well, all I was going to say is I think that on the governance process with prospective property purchases, there's two things really. So one is on our, and whether it's fit for purpose is a moot point in terms of how quickly we might want to react. But at the moment we have processes in place around which would require purchases above an amount to go actually to Cabinet and Council. So that is a decision making and governance process that is in existence at the moment. So if we were to do something immediately, then those governance process would have to be followed. So there is that which members of the committee could expect to see if we want to do something in the near future. Beyond that, if the governance processes are changed to reflect the realities of buying commercial property, then those processes and the changes to those processes will also go to Cabinet and Council. So members will have the opportunity to review and consider those. And I think in reality, it is fair to say that would mean less ability to control the process before it happened. There would be the opportunity to scrutinise things after the event, but clearly scrutinising things after the event rather than before things have happened is maybe less comfortable. But again, we haven't actually drafted those out at the moment. We're potentially going to take some advice on how those work, but all councils will get an opportunity to see those and vote on those in due course as and when they're presented. So there is, you know, I certainly wouldn't say that this in itself allows us carte blanche to just spend £5 million without further scrutiny.
And it would also need some provision in the budget, wouldn't it?
It depends what it would be, but if it was £5 million on something that wasn't in the capital programme, for example, then that would come through as a capital plan amendment report, which both certainly Cabinet would see, and that amount, I would expect that to go to Council as well.
Right. Now, may I just... Yes. I'm trying to get this clear in my mind, which is difficult, because I don't have the investment strategy Cabinet report of 19th of September under my pillow. You know, it's not one of those things that you...
I'm slightly disappointed.
But that is a strategic report about money. Mm. And in my simple view, we're looking at raising revenue, and this is looking at commercial property.
Yeah.
Yep. And it's been suggested possibly that we buy a fleet for environmental services for the contract. It's about priorities. And are some of these priorities that we have to, as a borough council, that we have to meet all of these things that are coming in, you know, with new laws and everything else, you know, hopefully I'm trying to make sense. So we're looking at raising revenue. We have got priorities and possibly this environmental services contract. There's also, surely, Simon, that we've got volatility of the in the markets at the moment. It's not quite it's not quite as usual as it. I mean, I know over you've talked to us about over the 5 year.
Yep.
But at the moment, it's sort of like all over the place. That's one thing. And finally, I would say, is a lot of this guesswork, and that by January, that I don't know where we are and with the guesswork and everything else, but can you see where I'm coming from? And how? And I'm certainly taking it on board about what Jeff is saying. You know, we need to think about that, and we don't have to think about that until early next year.
Yeah, that's correct. I mean, we've got an overall capital programme. So again, historically, we've not borrowed for we've borrowed £80 million to refinance our council house stock. So that's on the HRA side. So some of you might remember that. But on the general fund side, we haven't actually borrowed any money since. Well, we borrowed something on a fixed. I think it was 11.25% back in 1984, which seemed like a good idea at the time. But we haven't actually borrowed any money in the intervening period of time, and that's because we've been able to finance our capital programme basically through either capital receipts, which are the proceeds of sales of assets, or through some of the surplus reserves we've made up through the revenue fund. So that's what we've been able to do. There are ongoing requirements for the capital fund. So for example, there are buildings that require maintenance to make sure our health and safety duties are fulfilled. There are things like upgrades to parks where we need to maintain the standard of multi-use games areas, etc., etc. There's all that in there. We're now having suggested, or we're still not a firm commitment, but having set out the intention to do two things. So one is to finance the refuse freighter fleet, which the cabinet report on this suggests is a good idea, because the financing costs would be lower than the additional lease costs that we would incur if it was all rolled into the contract, and that's a substantial sum. And then the intention to purchase commercial property with a 10 million pot, they're also commercial sums. So the council is at a point in time when we're moving away from the happy circumstance where we're able to finance our capital programme using our internal resources to potentially needing external resources. So we're moving into that environment, and as you say, there is various volatilities and things we need to consider. So things like interest rates may determine whether an investment opportunity is viable or not. So our ability to borrow from the PWLB actually is still the same, but the interest rate applicable to loans has gone up, making that relatively less attractive. So there is that, but it is we do have to look at the overall capital programme, and all those separate elements are things that we need to finance. So to be honest, to the extent there's a gap, we would need to fill that gap in with borrowing.
Another point, page 53, just a point for the minutes. I think the proposed change column should be in millions, not thousands. Just for when you update the minutes.
Just check that.
I think it should be millions, not thousands.
You're right.
On page 53, I'm obviously, once again, extraordinarily concerned about the capital spend that's appearing.
Yes.
Which is something we noted and requested our chair to go to cabinet and flag, yes, last year, without the figures, again, one of my reasons for not being completely electronic yet is I don't have a year's worth of papers up in the new modern Gov system, so I can't look back at last year's paper, and haven't got it here because I haven't been home. We're worse this year than we were last year at this stage, 6 months in. So can I just confirm that the 15053 is the year's capital spend, not the 6 months to date original estimate, or is that the 6 month to date original estimate?
So I haven't got precisely the figures in front of me, but that 15 million, I think that I'm virtually certain that is the year's That is a year's budget, and we've spent to date
1.9. 6 months into the year.
Did you get some additional information?
Yes, I did. I raised it. It's one of the queries, and you're right, it is 15 million.
It is 15 million.
For the year, so it's not a year to date.
So the actual spend actually reflects the invoices we've paid to date. There are some other. I think there is some other work we've done where we haven't actually received the invoices yet. I apologise, I haven't got that report in front of me. I think
at the end of period 7, we'd spent 4.6 million.
Yeah.
And
the profile was on the general fund.
Yeah. And the general fund was 1.45 million against a profiled spend of 1.396. So on that basis, we're slightly ahead of the curve. On the HRA, the spend was 3.178 against a profile budget of 3.629.
After 0.7, after month 7.
Yeah. Which would be the end of October, won't it?
Yeah.
End of October. Because it's just, you know, this happened last year that, you know, maybe we ought to have this report after 7 months, not six. Because I remember when we raised this after 6 months last year, the following month there was enormous expenditure came through. And once again, we flag it, and 1 month later, on month 7, all the figures are much better. I find that slightly worrying.
I think partly it's a presentational matter, so that we present here the actuals based on invoices, whereas I think it's probably, whereas actually the commitments does reflect some level of estimation, but is probably a better reflection of the amount of work done. I will say that in terms of concerns and the profiling of our capital spend, I wouldn't want to leave the committee with the impression that it's all completely rosy and we're all completely out of the woods. So it is something we are looking at, and certainly internally we're looking at quite hard. There is going to be a new capital plan presented, and there'll be some differing or a revised presentation of that, reflecting the fact that some things we are in our own gift and we should be delivering against those, and if we don't deliver against those, that's maybe a project management issue, and there are other areas where they are third party projects or where we've committed to spend but without an appropriate implementation plan in place. So there will be a revised presentation in the new capital plan, but with this one, I would say in terms of profile, the situation is not too terrible. It's sort of not unreasonable, but as Councillor Parsons notes, it's the profile is very much backloaded, so the pressure is definitely going to be on the teams to deliver against that, deliver against this year's capital programme and the remaining 4.5 months of the year.
Councillor Poulton.
Yeah, I just think it would have been helpful to, if we could have seen that information in advance of the meeting, so that, you know, we would have been more of what, because I've just sat there and you've read it out to me, but I haven't actually seen it.
Yeah, sorry, I only saw it when I arrived here.
The chair very sensibly asked for that information, so we provided it to him, so it is. It sort of come out with the agenda, but apologies for that.
Perhaps we could have a brief update for the February meeting as to where we are, just as a standalone item that might give us some reassurance.
So that'll be February, where you probably get up to a period, depends on the timing of the February meeting, you might get up to period 9 or 10, depending on timing.
February meeting's on the 18th.
Maybe.
So we'd neither get December's figures or
January. So there's no reason why we shouldn't have December's figures for them.
Just one more. On page 59, on the investment portfolio, the 216, my memory, that's above the overall annualised figure for...
Sorry, I'm just talking.
Page 59, we show the 6 month investment return, and were that doubled to 432. I think that's above budget. It's above what I remember being in the budget for the return, were that annualised. So, in other words, it's doing better than we expected.
Yeah, I think it might be 250-ish. I think we're broadly on track. We're not going to be hugely over or under, assuming things
250 for the annual. 250 was the 6 month target.
I think we're sorry. I haven't quite got to the number yet. I can't quite remember. But I think investment interest. I think we've looking at about 450-ish for the year, as I recall.
In the budget.
In the budget.
I think it was less than that.
I have to apologise. I haven't got precise figure in front of me. So I think
you don't happen to know how much of that's the two property funds of the 216?
I don't. They are performing in line with expectations. So we get periodic reports on them. So they are actually. Performing well enough. I haven't got the precise details, so if you wanted to ask for those, if you're interested, we can provide that information. But they are performing to the standard, so that
it just would be interesting on just those two, because obviously everything else carries the interest rate next to it, so we can calculate
yes.
that. And the two funds don't. It would just be interesting when it was reported, were those two funds
yeah.
just dropped into a separate box with how much they'd earned in the period showing. Just because I can work out what the interest is for 6 months at 1.05% on 2 million, whereas I don't know what the interest.
Yes, I mean obviously we don't necessarily know what the return is until it varies depending on the payout and the individual performance. But we can. Would you like?
I'd be interested in how proportionate the 216 is the two funds.
Yeah, we can work out the return on those in the. Hopefully, we'll be able to produce a number for the return on those for the precise.
And could we report that next time, just so that we can see it? Just a pure interest as to how they are performing.
If you can minute that, Sally.
I think
we should be able to do that. We'll let the committee know. So we should be able to provide that.
Thank you, James.
Thank you. Any further questions?
I'm tempted to say, what? No, Icelandic bank. You remember those days?
That's a long time ago now. I think we're past the 10-year anniversary.
This is such a tense meeting, you know.
Right. I'm not actually clear on what we're recommending here. The recommendations from somewhere else.
I believe it's for the committee to note. So this one's been to, if I'm correct, I think this one's been to Cabinet and is due to go to Council in due course. So
we're noting it.
That is the case, yes.
Mm-hmm. And we're also noting the second part as well.
I don't think there's any decision. It is for noting. Obviously, it's more of a chance to ask officers questions.
There's a decision for council to take in the first recommendation.
Yes.
And the second one, council will be noting.
They will be noting it. Yes. Sorry,
yeah.
Chair.
Then all we're doing at this stage is noting the report.
Yes.
Well, see, I don't want to vote for the first one. I'll put my hand down for the first one because I'm not going to recommend that. As it currently stands, I want to push a vote for on the first recommendation. I'm not going to put my hand up on the first one because I'm not comfortable.
Any recommendations, Chair?
No, we're not making rec. Are we?
You're just noting the report.
Yes.
but it says we're recommending to council.
No, that's being. Sorry, that's what Cabinet's already
that's
done.
That's what's coming from Cabinet. That's what I thought.
Okay, that's fine. We're just noting it. I can't do anything. That's fine. I need to note it elsewhere.
Yeah, the opportunity will be at the full
council
meeting.
Well, council, yeah. Popular once again.
So on that clear understanding, are we happy to note the report?
Yes.
And the second point was the further information we requested.
It's in motion, isn't it? It will continue, and we've still got.
Yes.
This isn't final or anything. So,
no,
how do you feel about that, Jeff?
Well, the way the recommendation, if we're noting the recommendation, that's absolutely fine. But this is not the point, as has been made out, to push back. I'm not going to put a minority minute point, etc., etc., but it's got to be dealt with elsewhere. I won't just roll over on this particular issue. So, that's fine. I just need to do it myself elsewhere.
It's noted.
Noted. Then the other thing is we've agreed that we'll have a report back on capital programme spend in February.
Yeah.
Do we need to minute the reference about the split of interest on
that? I think if Sally records in the minute, if we make sure that the Leslie's got a copy, we'll take an action to do that. Okay. I think I should be able to circulate that to the committee in a fairly short order. But then it's making sure we amend the report format slightly.
Then we move on to the internal audit progress report.
Thank you, Chair. If I could start off by giving the committee a brief update on where we are with the shared service proposal. You may remember that we took the opportunity of staff turnover within the internal audit team at the beginning of the calendar year to look at potential alternative options to deliver the internal audit function moving forward. We settled on a proposed shared service with North West Leicestershire and Bailey, which Cabinet approved in principle in September. North West Leicestershire, as the lead authority, then put out an advert to recruit to a new auditor post that would have spent two-thirds of their time working for Charnwood, and therefore substantially helping us to deliver the internal audit service moving forward. Unfortunately, we had no applicants for that position. And I think quite rightly North West have said they don't want to launch the shared service until they are resourced to deliver it. So we have been in discussions with them. They are going to be re-advertising the post with an improved reward package, and they're also going to be opening it up to suitably experienced people who may be part qualified rather than fully qualified. But people would have to demonstrate substantial internal audit experience. What that's meant is the shared service will not now be starting as soon as we hoped it would. So you may recall that we had outsourced 90 internal audit days to a firm called BDO, an accounting and auditing firm. There's a summary on page 65 of those 90 days and progress against them. Given that the shared services commencement date is now going to be delayed, we have commissioned BDO to do a further 44 days audit work from the current year's internal audit plan. So the committee may have raised some eyebrows at the very low percentage of this year's audit plan that's been delivered, so I thought it would just be worth taking some time explaining where we are with that. So if you turn to page 71 and 72, which summarises the current year's internal audit plan. If we start on page 71, you'll see that the majority of that page is looking at key financial systems audits with a total of 52 days. Those audits are always completed in the final quarter of the year. And Tracy Hayes, who's with us tonight, who's the remaining member of our internal audit team, will be delivering those audits in quarter four. So touch wood, if Tracy stays with us and doesn't succumb to any horrible lurgies, those 52 days will be delivered in quarter four. The audit plan then moves on at the bottom of page 71 to strategic and service risk audits. And that rolls over onto the next page, and you'll see there's a total of 231 days against that. With the work that we have now commissioned to do for us, they will be delivering 107 of those 231 days. Their work is scheduled, it's already started, and it will run through until the end of March, so they will be delivering not far off 50% of those 231 days. We will not probably be able to fully deliver the internal audit plan for this year, but I think you'll see that we're not quite as bad as it looks at the moment. So we will deliver 60-70% with a following wind by the end of the year. It is going to be a transitional year. It's a very unfortunate the shared service hasn't materialised as quickly as we'd hoped it would. And while Trace is here, I'd like to draw your attention to page 66, which outlines the audit reports that have been issued since the last audit committee meeting. I would like to personally thank Tracy for all her hard work and support. It's Tracy that's been looking after things, keeping things ticking over. So it's largely thanks to Tracy that we have been able to issue as many audit reports as we have done, and we are now virtually fully completed the 2018-19 audit plan. If there are any detailed questions about the audit reports that have been issued or anything else, I've summarised for you this evening, Chair. I'll obviously be able to help out, or if it's details about the audit reports, Tracy, hopefully you'll be able to assist.
Mr. Bolton.
I'd also like to thank Ms. Hayes for all the work that she's done and the constant supply of audit reports that we get through. So thank you for that. I have to say that building on something I said at probably the last meeting and the one before, I am concerned. I know you're saying that we've almost finished the work or have finished the work for last year, but we're now 8 months into the next financial year. So I've got a grave concern about the fact that we're nowhere near where we should be. And as an audit committee member, along with my colleagues here, we're going to be asked to sign off and be satisfied with the level of assurance, which through no fault of our auditors, I'm just not sure that we're getting. And sort of building on top of that, I'm astonished, having been an internal auditor myself for many years, having recruited internal auditors for clients of mine, I'm just really surprised that nobody applied. And I have a question finally at the end of this, which is how did we try to recruit, or how did North West Leicestershire try to recruit? Because there are many places that where you can you can put out ads, agencies that you can go through, specialist internal audit, recruitment consultants. And I just find it really disappointing that you said not one application, which I think is really disappointing.
So, Chair, I'm not an expert on North West Leicestershire's recruitment procedures. I do know they advertised on Jobs Go Public, which is the national local government database of all local authority jobs. During the proposed second recruitment phase, they are going to use a specialist audit recruitment publication as well, or quite a substantial extra cost, I have to say. I think it's also perhaps indicative of the recruitment market that we did try and recruit somebody on an interim agency basis earlier in the year through our platform that we use for interim and agency staff. And again, we have not a single response to that recruitment advert either.
And that's what salary level we were looking at.
I can't off the top of my head remember exactly, Chair.
For the North West?
For the North West job.
It was PO1, PO, mid PO2 on our scale.
Okay. So principal officer grade.
I don't know what...
That means something to me.
I don't know, Chair. I can't remember the salary figures off the top of my head, and I wouldn't like to guess and mislead the committee.
Can I do some research for the committee?
Councillor Parsons.
Yeah, the banking report today on TSB slated the board of TSB for the IT transfer of the accounts from the Lloyds system. And it slated the board for not asking enough questions, not being fussy enough, not understanding what was going on, and for not seeking reassurance. And that cost them, I can't remember what the figure was, £4 billion, £400 million or whatever it was. I can't be happy with the last couple of years in terms of the internal audit function. That's got nothing whatsoever to do with any personalities or personal issues. And the work people do is fantastic. But the reality is, the assurance this committee has is twofold. It has the external auditor's report of the year that we sign off. We say we tick that box. And we have the internal audit is this committee's
reassurance to the outside world that we're doing our job and the council's doing its job. 2 years ago, we had a whatever the top level of audit compliance is. We were fantastic, whatever the word is for the tiers. Last year, we dropped down a level, and we're not going to complete this year's audit in any way at the moment unless we buy the service and we spend money on it. And we are only just, as has already been pointed out, 8 months in, still not finishing off 18-19. I cannot sit here and go, I'm comfortable and I'm reassured and leave the room and go, no worries, chaps, because that would just be negligent of me. And it's not because I've got any personal gripe or anything else. I can't possibly walk out of the room tonight and just tick the box and go, it's fine. And I know that's not the intent of people and officers. If we don't get this combined service person when we do the next round of job adverts, we'll be sitting here in another 6 months' time going, well, we're now a year behind in the internal audit processes. And this committee, for its own self-respect, should want better reassurance from the internal processes of this council. And I for one, can't just walk out the room tonight and go, okay, got the report, noted, tick. I can't do that. And if we do that, again, my hand will be down and I'll have to address it elsewhere. I'm extraordinarily uncomfortable that one of the key functions of this group, which is to receive the internal audit reports, to devise the plan, to oversee the delivery of that internal audit plan, to give reassurance on behalf of the public to the rest of the world that we're doing a job. It's not because I don't think we are, but it just isn't there. And time and time again, we see things failing because the scrutiny is not appropriate. We don't poke hard enough. We're very nice and we're very pleasant, and I'm trying to be very nice and very pleasant, but I'm not happy. So I can't address it in this room. I'll address it for council very publicly, or address it for cabinet. But the internal audit performance, because we don't have the resources and we're not completing it, is dropping. And our internal level of assurance, which this committee should be proud of trying to achieve the highest level of reassurance, is dropping. And I don't, for one, feel comfortable with that. I don't feel comfortable saying I'm on the audit committee, but we have not the resources to complete an internal audit, and we're 8 months late. And the second one, we're saying already, we're no chance. I can't see any way we buy another 150 days of time of getting this year's internal audit, which we put our name to. We said at the meeting, here's the plan, we agree to the plan, it's realistic. I can't do that. I just can't do that. That's beyond my boundary of what I can find acceptable to sign off on. I can't do that and maintain any sense of credibility as an individual.
No, you're absolutely right. And even if they're going out to recruitment now, there's a lead-in period for anybody appointed. Yeah. They may be on 2 months' notice. You've got to take out references. We're not likely to get anybody towards spring next year, are we?
Realistically, if we manage to recruit in the second phase, realistically, I can see the new chair service starting on the 1st of April with the following wind.
The what to do about it is a different issue.
Well, Chair, this committee does have the right to refer concerns to other committees, cabinet, scrutiny, full council, so you do always have the option to refer your concerns onwards.
Can I ask where the decision or where the level of we're buying 107 days came from? Did someone give you a budget or release a budget, or did someone...
The initial 90...
Where did that come from?
Chair, the initial 90 days was based on an assumption that the shared service will be up and running in the autumn. As I said, bearing in mind that we now know it's not going to be, I decided to buy in an extra 44 days. And myself and Tracy did work through the internal audit plan, and we prioritised those audits within that 44 days that were the ones we felt should be done.
Okay. We're not the decision-making body. And I, for my own personal credibility to sit in a room and be accountable for something, can't not raise this with Cabinet or with full council, whichever the best route is we choose to do so, that the rest of the committee can speak for themselves, but I can't walk out of here and go everything's fine and maintain any sense of credibility with the current numbers in front of me as to where we're going.
and so I we need to go to Cabinet, we need to make in the strongest terms we are not reassured that we have an internal audit function which is meeting the plan that we laid out and giving us the reassurance that the council is operating at the highest standards that we would wish it to where we were a year and a half ago. We have to say something in the appropriate place to bring this very loudly to attention, because audits for some people is a little thing tucked away on the side and we just don't worry about it. It's a funny place where people go and plug numbers and don't really know what's going on, and that's not acceptable. Audit's an important function. It's an important function in my corporate life, in corporate function in my business life, and it's an important function here. And we need to flag that we are not reassured. I, for one, I can't say we. I am not reassured.
No, I take your point. I think the correct way of escalating is to go to Cabinet, isn't it?
My advice would be Cabinet, Chair, in this case.
Right.
I mean, all I will say is I absolutely accept the points that are being made. We have had probably for 12 to 18 months now a problem resourcing the internal audit team. 12 months ago we had long-term sickness, the committee may remember, and we had to buy in days then. The potential solution to the problem moving forward to increase resilience was the shared service arrangement. Unfortunately, we haven't been able to recruit to the key post that's needed to get that arrangement up and running.
But were something to go wrong, that wouldn't hold up in any court or in any position where we publicly went on stage and said, yeah, well, because we had a few problems recruiting, this all happened and it was really bad. But we didn't do anything, we just kind of said it. It wouldn't hold water outside of this room. We all understand the circumstances, but for the public looking in, were something to happen on our watch, I couldn't stand there and go, you know, I say to my staff, you know, I'm as good as what I can prove on paper in the dock when the judge asks me. If I can't prove it and we haven't done it, I can't let that go by. That's wrong. It's wrong of me to sit here and say it's fine. It's not. And I can't just leave it to go.
I just want to say that I fully support everything that Councillor Parsons has said, and I would support the action of taking to Cabinet or wherever.
Yes, Chair. I think we've been here before once or twice, you know, when the committee isn't satisfied. This is a standalone, Adrian would be the person. This is a standalone committee that is not political, even though it is made up politically, you know, by members. And we are working together as a non-political non-political situation where we are the people that I'm concerned about are the residents. We are the face of the Borough Council as regards financial and whatever other things are audited. You know, that we are the face of that, and we are a collective regarding that. And so, just for reassurance, can you please tell us the status of this committee, only that I know that we are the face of the Borough Council regarding these issues?
Well, the audit, you're absolutely right, Councillor Harris. The Audit Committee is a non-political committee. I'm not sure that is the status of the committee. It's a non-political committee, okay. Although, as somebody said, it is membership is drawn based on political balance.
And we are here, trying to bring the council to account as best we can and do the right thing for the residents of our borough. And I would support what Jeff has just said, and therefore, I suspect, I don't know whether it be Simon or Adrian, how do we carry that message across to those people that are making those decisions? And of course there is an issue about staffing and or whatever you're talking about for these other days and everything else that has to be carried through to those people that can make the decisions. You know, that is not in our gift. All we can do is say, you're not doing your job, can you please do better? And how can we therefore say that to the full council, which represents everybody?
I think through you, Chair, the committee will have to articulate its concerns and make it very clear to Cabinet what your concerns are, for Cabinet then to decide how to act on the committee's concerns.
I suspect Mark's listening as well, because one of your functions is to liaise with the internal audit to minimise work.
So, yes, it's important that we do that we minimise work, but we do not rely on internal audit. We place no reliance on the work of internal audit, and that's nothing to do with the quality of internal audit. It's just the external audit standards are written in a way that actually it means that for us to rely on internal audit, we'd have to repeat all of their work anyway. So you get no benefit from it.
Right.
What we do consider is we do consider the effectiveness of the overall control environment, and we use that as an indicator of our underlying risk assessment. And we do that on both the financial statements in terms of key financial systems. We also do it in terms of the value for money conclusion, in consideration of the overarching control environment and the level of risk exposure, which is in agenda item 9 in terms of your risk registers. We also, and I think a key document for the council is the annual governance statement. Because the annual governance statement is a way that actually understands where there are particular concerns in the organisation. So we do feed into it from there. Internal audit is a key factor in the assurances for this committee through to council and beyond that into the general public. So it is an absolutely imperative part of the underlying environment. Some thoughts about yourself in the current situation you're in. So these are, I'll be very, very clear. These are just thoughts for your own consideration and where they're at. So first of all is it might be useful for you to have something prior to looking at the 2019-20 annual governance statement around the kind of three lines of defence, the assurance framework within the council, because that will delineate between, you know, key areas of risk, where you're getting management assurance, where you're getting which should be the majority of assurances that come to an organisation, management assurance. Beyond that, it then goes into your independent assurances through internal audit, through external audit, and other kind of agencies and regulators. Because any organisation entirely dependent on either us as external auditors or as internal audit is not working or operating effectively in terms of its assurances. Secondly, in terms of your plan, where any organisation is struggling to develop a plan and implement a plan, the question is the plan the right one in the first place? Now, again, that is not for me to consider. You've considered that, you've adopted a plan, you've determined the number of days, you've determined where it's at. But given where you're at, I think that gives you a chance to go, actually, was this plan the right one in the first place? Is it targeted in the right places? Going into a shared service is very common within local authorities at the moment. It puts that resilience in place. The question I put out is, when I look at your number of days, 343 days, that is not uncommon in terms of a local authority. It is significantly higher than I would see in any other organisation outside of local government. So my question is, what makes local government so special that it needs twice the number of days of an organisation of its size? It's just, I'm not saying which one is right, which one is wrong. You have to get the assurances that you need And then the last point I'll make is just in terms of recruitment, over the last 4 or 5 years, I've recruited somewhere in the region of about 40 staff. All right, it is hard. The level of skilled resource out there in not just audit, but in finance as well, which there is an ever decreasing circle of people with the relevant skills and experience out there. So it is genuinely very difficult. The lead time to get somebody who really knows what they're doing is much harder than you might think. And I say that from you know, genuine personal experience of trying to get people across for me, a much bigger, you know, I cover both the East and the West Midlands, so you think geographically I've got a lot of counties to pick from, but try and find people that really understand local government as well as audit is very, very difficult. So as an authority, they are, you know, as a team, they are definitely in a very difficult position.
Councillor Bolton first.
Thank you. I have not been involved in the development of the internal audit plan because I'm a new councillor this year. But it does strike me that, exactly as you've said, that we need to be really careful when we pull the plan together. And your model of the three lines of defence, etc., which I'm very familiar with, is a really good starting point. Because we need to be saying, as the audit committee, what assurance do we want? Where are we going to get that assurance from? And what I've not heard an awful lot of in the 6 months I've been on this committee is your point, John, about management assurance. Because so much of our assurance should be coming in some way, shape or form directly from management. And that is then supported by the independent objective assurance from yourselves and others. So I'm interested to see the process that we're going to go through. I mean, I guess you pull the plan together and we review it as the audit committee, but I'm really interested to look at that, whether we should, John, be putting in 380 something days or 200, I don't know. But I think it's up to us as the audit committee to decide the level of assurance that we're looking for, that enables us then to sign off the governance statement.
Two points, just one in answer. So a couple of years ago, we very actively, this committee, tried to involve itself and did so successfully in understanding how the internal audit plan was drawn up.
Mm-hmm.
And we spent some time requesting information about the risk profile, which things were selected randomly, what was the annual bits and pieces. Mm-hmm. So we spent time a couple of years ago trying to understand that framework that the internal audit team constructed the internal audit from. So we did do some of that work up front to understand that better. On another point, this will gain traction if we take this, because I'm looking at the annual governance statement for 18-19, and the two signatories on the bottom of it aren't you and me. They're the chief exec and the leader of the council. And the internal audit environment is writ large across the annual governance statement. I don't need to read any more than point 6. The review of effectiveness is informed by the work of the senior managers who have responsibility for development, maintenance, governance environment, the annual internal audit report, also comments made by the external auditor. It's writ large across the entirety of the annual governance statement, which the chief exec and the leader of the council sign, not us. So if we are going to them saying we are not happy with where we are with the internal audit environment, I think it will gain swift traction because it is writ large that they're comfortable with it, because they've signed the document from last year where we didn't complete internal and we need to rectify this.
Indeed, it concentrates the mind on
it. When you sign the piece of paper, when it's your name on the bottom.
Can I just maybe add just two or three maybe final comments? So number one, PO1 to PO, bottom of PO1 to the top of PO2 on our salary scales is a range of £32,000 to £39,000. Right. So that's where that salary is pitched. So you take your view on that. I think just why so many days, actually, and this is part of the framework why as Section 151 officer with a special duty around our framework is actually because we're quite complicated, and actually I draw as an organisation, if you actually looked at page 70, which I have done sort of at random when you see the sort of things we do, so car parking, revenues and benefits, garden waste schemes, sport and active recreation, CCTV. Sorry?
Presumably all cash handling items, high risk.
I don't believe it is CCT, but some of those, yes. Easy. But what I think, what I would say is we're not, I think people, certainly, you know, I'm not born and bred into local government, so certainly you sort of imagine the council sort of 400 people sitting at desks all doing the same job when you don't know about it, but actually in reality we've got 400 full-time equivalent staff, but actually they're teams of six, teams of eight, teams of 20, teams of two. So actually within the council there's a lot of complexity, which I think is, so complexity means racing diversity, and that's why I think we've got sort of a relatively wide number of audit days, and in the plan's been pulled together to reflect risk, but also the fact that, you know, we have got lots of nooks and crannies within the organisation, so we do like to, even if there's a low risk, such as for example the museum, we do potentially go and visit the museum periodically to demonstrate to the staff and maybe the audit committee in generally that all bits of the council can be subject to audit. And as Section 151 officer, and I think to be fair, Adrian and myself have had various conversations on this, and I think in fairness neither Adrian nor myself are particularly comfortable with where we are at the moment. I think we've got a way forward, so I think we can complete the existing audit plan we can progress the existing audit plan to an acceptable level. Certainly looking at risks, so things like the key financial systems, we will make sure they're done. Some of the other areas we may not be the case, but if we're struggling again and the shared service doesn't come to pass, then in the short term what we'll have to do is find budgets that don't exist or overspending areas to make sure we do deliver the plan by getting an external resource. And if we still continue to struggle, then we'll maybe have to revisit our plan around the shared service and make alternative arrangements. But as Mark said, it is difficult to recruit. We are finding that in audit, to some extent finance, legal, planning. So there are various professional services of councils generally where it is a bit of a struggle. It does lead to gaps and pressures on the budgets when we need to use agency or outsource staff. So I think just in summary, I with the responsibility for this, I'm not feeling dreadfully comfortable where we are at the moment. I can see that we can get to a point which is acceptable, but it will require, if not necessarily a lot of luck, it will certainly require nothing else to no other adverse things to go wrong, as Adrian referred to, sort of Tracy getting the lurgy for two couple of weeks of flu, that could be one of them. So we could do without all of those to get us into a just about reasonable position for the year end.
Yeah, if we go back a few years, we had the head of audit and risk, and we had two internal auditors, and now we're down to one, aren't we?
Mm. So that's resilience-wise, that's not in that. I think we would regard that as insufficient resource, which is what we're trying to address.
But what is the cost of an outsourced day to BDO?
Substantially more than it would cost. I don't think it's appropriate to give
a figure.
No, I don't. I'm quite happy to circulate that privately to the committee, but you're probably looking at three times the cost of an in-house person. And having been a head of internal audit myself in local government for more years than I care to remember, local government internal audit seems to be one of these cyclical things where councils will have an in-house team, there'll be a problem with the in-house team like we've had, they'll outsource, then they realise, and if we did, we could, one of the options I looked at was full outsourcing, and I did actually speak to some potential providers. And what you will get, probably you will get a 5% reduction in cost and a 50% reduction in days. And what they will say is the way they work is substantially more efficient and they know what they're doing, and therefore they can give you the same level of assurance for half the number of days but charge you twice as much per day. So I'll circulate something privately to the committee afterwards with the actual cost, if that's okay, Chair. Mm.
We need to know this to Cabinet, Chair, because if we didn't, something went wrong, Cabinet would ask us what we were doing on watch when whatever it was went wrong. And we need to know this in the strongest terms to Cabinet. Once we've done so, and however we choose to word that, it's then up to Cabinet to make decisions about what they do. But I can't go tonight without agreeing or personally doing it in flagging this to Cabinet, because it just, if something went wrong, and I don't expect it to, but if it did, Cabinet would be asking us why we didn't flag it, what happened on our watch when we saw these figures, when we saw what was happening, and we saw where we are. They would be asking us, quite rightly, what were we doing on watch.
Can we clarify what we want Cabinet to do?
Chair, I think we need to write a statement to Cabinet outlining our concerns in the strongest terms. And whether that's, we need to collectively sign it, so that it's the entire Order Committee, if everyone wants to sign it. If it's me, I'm happy to do it myself. If it's you, Chair, through you, I don't have an issue how we do it. We need to construct a form of word to Cabinet to raise the strongest concerns over the issue. And picture of a dropping level of assurance that this committee's got from the internal functions. Not because of the people involved or the work they're doing, I stress that, nothing to do with that, the environment and the resources. I can remember sitting here 3 years ago with the dead internal audit going, do you have enough resources to do the job? And being told yes, and being assured that that comment was honestly given, and but that's not the situation now.
No, you're absolutely
and we
right.
need to raise that to Cabinet. Once we've done that, Cabinet needs to make a decision about what we do.
Just as a suggestion for you and the committee to consider, Chair, the committee could resolve that they wish their concerns to be escalated to Cabinet, and they could potentially ask yourself and the Vice-Chair to work together to draft something, then circulate it to the other members of the committee outside the meeting, and everybody, if everybody's then happy, they could delegate you and or the Vice-Chair to go along to Cabinet and present your concerns to Cabinet.
Yeah, I think we've got to do that.
I'm happy to come and play bodyguard, Chair.
So is that again?
I said I'm happy to come and be the Chair's bodyguard if you're quiet.
Right.
That surely is the bottom line of what we're supposed to do, Chair. You know, we're bringing this sort of stuff to the attention of the Cabinet, and that's the important thing.
Because as Councillor Parsons correctly wrote, it's for the leader and the chief executive to sign the governance statement, and
but we give them the assurance that they're okay to sign it.
Yes. So what we're saying is we're not prepared to do that at this stage.
The way things are now,
Okay.
So we speak.
Okay.
Sorry, Chair, just to clarify, is that
have we made a resolution then?
On which we wish to proceed? Is the committee happy to proceed on that basis?
Can I ask for a vote?
I'll move to proceed.
Yeah, I guess that's carried then. Are there any other questions on the report?
Can we start tomorrow night?
We are done with that point now, aren't we? We'll move on to risk management and risk register update, which is
that will be me again, Chair, if you want the introduction. So this is the quarterly update of the strategic risk register. So just as a brief reminder, the corporate leadership team, which is the heads of service together with chief executive and strategic directors, have a quarterly risk management group meeting. One of the things we look at is the strategic risk register, consider whether or not it needs updating or revising. The one amendment that's in the register from the last time the committee saw it was we've added in to strategic risk 3 the action that we're taking in relation to, or we were taking in relation to, a potential disorderly Brexit. So you'll see at the bottom of page 133 in the planned actions that we are participating in the local resilience forums. Brexit planning processes, we have appointed a Brexit lead officer, as has every local authority in the country. The Brexit lead officer happens to be myself. You'll no doubt be aware that we have had an extension from the European Union to the 31st of January, so we have all stood down for the time being, but we are starting meetings again early in December to start the planning process for a potential disorderly Brexit on the 31st of January. So that's the only addition as a as an ongoing action that we have added into the risk register, Chair.
Councillor Bolton.
I just had one question, please. I'm on the commercialisation scrutiny panel. And I just wondered whether one of the mitigations that we could include in the risk register around, I think there's a risk there about funding drying up. Mm. And I just wondered whether actually developing the commercialisation strategy, which is in process at the moment, could actually be recorded as a mitigation against loss of income.
That's
just a thought.
That would be, I think that would fall under strategic risk 4, Chair, which talks about external funding and income generation sources. And we will, the corporate leadership team will be reviewing this register again at the beginning of December, so that's something I will raise at that stage and see if it is something that people want to add in as a mitigating action.
Okay. Anybody else have any comments to make on this report? Then the recommendation is to be noted.
The quarterly Ripper update, and surprise, surprise, once again, the council has not used any of our Ripper powers in the period in question. Just for information, the police do sometimes use their Ripper powers to use our CCTV system. There is an ongoing operation at the moment where that's the case, and because it's an ongoing operation, I can't go into any more detail at the moment. You may remember the last meeting or the meeting before that, the similar thing that happened with Operation Lionheart. Mm-hmm. So it's an ongoing police operation. That's as much information as I can give.
I don't think we ought to say any more than that anyway.
Can I just ask, when that comes into the council, where is that authority given from? Is it the Community Safety Partnership, the Chief Exec?
Sorry, which authority?
The police request that comes into us, the police. The JP presumably has passed, because I know that the JP has to pass it. So when it comes in here and we give our permission,
if the police want to use our CCTV systems for covert surveillance, we require them to produce evidence that they have got their own internal Ripper authorisation.
To you?
To the CCTV control room manager.
So the control room manager is the authority that sees the bit of paper and says you can use it?
Yes.
I'm content to note this report.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. The final report on the agenda is the work programme.
Final one for me, Chair. This is really just the committee's information. The items that are coming up on the work programme for the next few meetings, really for information, and to see if there's anything you want to add or amend.
We've added the updated on the capital programme through the minutes of this meeting, haven't we?
Yeah. Sorry, just for clarity, do you want that to come to the February meeting?
Yes.
Yeah.
Otherwise, we'll be told in June that things didn't deliver and we won't have had opportunity to comment it, other than in retrospect. It was probably slightly late in February to do anything about it, but we'll have to see. We might concentrate minds if we're asking for an update to come back that will help
on its own pushes things in the right direction.
Can we note this report?
Yes.
Yeah, sorry, just ask one question. Sorry, Chair. I don't know why I'm apologising. On the work programme, on the second box, the Treasury Management Statement Annual Investment Strategy and MRP Strategy, is that a performance review in February? Or is that to pass a new one for the year ahead, 2021?
It should be. It should be the new one, because we need to do a... as part of the capital strategy, which is due, which has got to be in place the first of April, that will need to be produced for Cabinet and then Council in February, because February is the last Council before the 1st of April, so it will come in at that point in time.
Should it say the 1920 plan? That's why I'm confused, whether it's a new one or whether it's a performance.
Yeah,
review.
It should say actually 2021.
Yeah. That's what I meant, sorry.
Sorry, yeah.
So actually, it's the new one for 2021
yeah.
coming.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Right, I think that concludes the business for this meeting. Can I close the meeting and thank everyone for their attendance. I'm sure a safe journey home and look forward to seeing you in 2020.
Thank you very much. Happy Christmas to see you.
It's a bit early for that.